The following program is an MLWRadio.com production.
Hey, it's Conrad Thompson, and you're listening to Something to Wrestle With. Bruce Pritchard, a very special bonus edition. Bruce, I'm fired up about it. It's Saturday night's main event from March of 1988.
It was a great time in the wrestling business because Hulkamania was going on hiatus, but it was hotter than ever, and the madness was on his way to the tippity-top of the top of the heap.
What we're going to encourage you to do right now is fire up your WWE Network and find this show. If you are watching on your computer, just click Shows and then Vault and then select Saturday Night's Main Event from the dropdown and then 1988 as your year. And ta-da, you'll see it right there from March of 1988. We're going to give you a second to get situated there. And then when we press play, or Bruce will count us down, you'll press play. And hopefully you've muted your television. And then you'll have Bruce and I in your ear hole. Are you looking forward to being in some ear holes today, Bruce?
Well, you know, I've been in a few ear holes in my day, and this time we're going to be on multiple ear holes all at the same design.
Well, I'm ready when you are, Bruce. So let's give a countdown, and we'll go ahead and get going.
All right, here we go. We're going to go in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And then when I say play, we're going to push play. So here we go, everybody, in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, play. Oh, yeah, you and me. Oh, yeah, $1 million man. There's no room in the danger zone for your kind or your money. No, you're a bad chick, $1 million man, and the Macho Man is going to bounce you out of here for good when the millions meet the madness. Oh, yeah.
So I love these old skits, man, the old promos. And what'd you call the mat? There's some sort
the
of
the ultimate. It's a green screen.
Yeah. Well, this is fun. When do you think you guys would have shot this? Of course, this goes down on March 12th, 1988, right up the road from me in Nashville, Tennessee, at the Municipal Auditorium. Of course, this is before Bridgestone was there. Did you guys film this in the arena, or would this have been done before that?
We shot it in the arena. We had the big green screen set up, and you see Beefcake there with his green hair.
He's glowing.
Almost looks like they've all got, you know, a bit of a green tint. This is when we were still perfecting, you know, the green screen effect. And it wasn't as perfect as later on it came to be, but it had a lot to do with lighting and everything else. It's the Slickster, baby. One man, there you are, right there on TV. And I like the way you waving your hands right now, just kind of warming them up. I wrote that part for Gang.
I've always been fascinated by this one, though. It's weird to think that Harley Race and Bobby Heenan are the same height.
Well, they're not. No, Harley's a little bit bigger there. Yeah, you got your height. Did you see? Harley's much taller, especially with the crown on.
Gosh, listen to you. Here you go. What's your Hogan impression?
Well, let me tell you something, brother. King, there's only one king, and it's the No, he's not the madness. Hulkamania, brother. The demandments, the prayers, Saturday night's made of it. That was Vince doing Hulk, Hulk doing Vince.
I just love this open, you know, the quick cameos, the green screen interviews, the music. This is hitting me right in the feels, man. I love these old Saturday night's main events that we get to cover here on the show.
You know, it was a good time, and it was something that was a little bit different, but it gave a great presentation of the product, and it was a little different for us. It kind of gave us not a night off, but it was a little bit different roles for us on Saturday night main event sometime.
Well, and we've covered the Saturday night's main event that we just saw a clip from there. Well, it was actually the main event, but this is our first Saturday night's main event we're covering like this. And here we go. This is always one of my favorite parts of the show because it just made it feel, sort of big time, you know, and I guess we should remind everybody that this aired at 11:30 Eastern, right? Right after the local news,
right after the local news in the usual time slot of Saturday Night Live.
And, instead of Saturday Night Live, we get these two characters, and this always felt like a big time duo. Whenever I hear Vince and Jesse, and I know it's on NBC, it feels like a big deal.
Yeah, and I like Vince's paisley tux going on here. And if you watch Jesse closely when he does the on cameras, you'll see Jesse mouthing the words because he's always got it memorized, and he's mouthing what Vince is going to do, and he gets ready for his stuff. And of course, as I say that, the son of a bitch isn't doing it. But Jesse had a bad habit of doing that a lot of times.
How would you describe? How would Vince McMahon describe Jesse Ventura's chin?
Cleft chin, but they both, you know what? They could be brothers if you just look at the chins, with Jesse kind of being the bigger, deeper brother, and then Vince's little dimple in there. So they're very similar chins. Never thought of that before.
What, that they might actually be related?
Well, they just look, the chins look similar. If you're only looking at the chin, it, you know, a lot of similarity. God, look at that deep chin. So masculine and deep and cleft. But Jesse was great at this. You know, Jesse was an absolute natural, and they had natural heat. So it was, oh my. But Jesse and Vince together, like you said, it was big time, man. They felt good together, and they had chemistry.
And of course, we're seeing a recap here from the main event that went down in February. And that's getting us ready for WrestleMania 4 here. Of course, what we just saw was the rematch from Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant at WrestleMania 3, but we've got the referee, and the referee is clearly ignoring Hulk getting the shoulder up. What, give us a reminder again about Hogan's promo afterwards in the locker room.
$1 million man. I don't know how much money you spent on the plastic surgery. Oh my God. Oh my God. The millions. Look at the $100 bills dripping out of their pockets right there, brother. Yeah, you can see it right there. The all the $100 bills just dripping out of those damn evil referee twin pockets.
And of course,
all the plastic surgery that, you know what? Still today, that plastic surgery is holding up on them Hebner people.
It really is. They did a wonderful job, whoever their attorney was, or their surgeon was. We should get them advertising with our RGT for law attorney. Hey, I feel like I should remind you that we're actually bringing this to you commercial free, but we do want to give a shout out to our friends who are doing something for a great cause right here, Bruce.
Over at thecrusher.org, that's dacrusher.org. They're only $5,000 away from their goal to erect a statue of the Crusher in Milwaukee. And of course, Greg the Hammer Valentine and Jimmy Hart knew how important the Crusher was to Milwaukee. And I'm sure Jimmy Hart is cutting a check right now, but every little bit helps. Go to thecrusher.org to help out.
Man, I love these old school promos. This dialogue, again, was mostly done by NBC.
That's why you get all the puns and all the smart ass things that the guys would never say in a million years. But yes, it was done by the folks at NBC, had writers that would write their promos for everybody.
I know I'm in the minority, but I love Greg Valentine's robe right there. That's gotta be an Olivia Walker.
Yeah, it is. As a matter of fact, he and Flair had Olivia do their stuff for him. And of course, wrestling too. Yes.
And here they come. We've got, Jimmy Hart, man. Is he the hardest working manager of 1988, you think?
He had a costume change for every single guy that he managed and was out and working his ass off every single time he got into the ring. Yeah, Jimmy was the hardest working guy in show business back in the day. Look at how young Greg Valentine looks. And the other thing, watch these entrances. That's the other thing kind of blows me away. But here's your boy. That's your boy right there.
Brutus the fucking Barber Beefcake. Talk to me about these shears. You know, these are just regular old gardening shears, but you guys decided to take it down and get them to like chrome dip the blades or something. What's the deal here?
Those are styling shears made specially for a Beefcake barber. Those are Beefcake barber shears, man. Those aren't just any kind of shears.
Where did he get the shears?
Shears are us.
I think shears is out of business. I don't know.
Well, you know,
so
not down in Texas, they still got a few outlets, just saying.
I feel like we should mention that these guys once upon a time were a tag team, right, Bruce?
Yes, they were managed by Johnny V. And here's what I was talking about, the entrance. You look at the entrance and them kind of coming down level with the crowd. You see the security guys on each side, the cameraman behind. Oh my God. If they were to shoot a camera today, it would be heresy. But you know, closer to the audience, just look at the railings around the ring and the barricades around the ring, just a completely different presentation. And at this time, man, this was big time. This was special for us because it gave a, you know, a little bit different presentation and just so much cleaner than our normal shows in a lot of ways.
How would you describe, or how would Vince McMahon describe Brutus the Barber Beefcake's attire?
Looks like the barber made those tights himself. You know, Jesse, he's known to use a pair of scissors every now and then. Wonder if Valentine's going to get a trim tonight. What do you mean he's going to get some trim, McMahon? No, oh. Wait, did I say that out loud?
Wow. Listen,
was that bad? That was bad.
With the old school reference too. So hypothetically we see, all the way up Brutus's leg here. Is Brutus wearing a thong or is he commando here?
I'm sure he's wearing a thong, but you get a little bit of Beefcake cheek.
Help me understand. Why does anybody need Beefcake cheek?
Beefcake was over, man. Come on. You know, you needed you some Beefcake cheek.
I'm a little uncomfortable right now.
No, you're not. You're digging it. You're mesmerized because you just see the delts and the quads and the pods and the shods and all just popping out right there. And you,
I don't, I hope
that's sexy.
I hope his pod doesn't pop. Wait a minute. Did you just say that's sexy?
Oh yeah. Come on, man. You got to admit that's a little sexy.
No, I'm going to go ahead and agree to disagree.
Well, you know, just saying.
This,
and I love how we have Earl Hebner in the ring referee. No reference to the twin referee at all.
That's
none. I guarantee you there's no reference at all. Oh my. Maybe he's a triplet.
We just saw one of those banners at the WWE warehouse. How cool is it that they still have some of this old stuff from, you know, 30 years ago?
I love it. And I love that the fact that they didn't recycle a lot of that stuff reached a point in the 80s where he saved everything. And a lot of the old promoters, man, they never saved their old tapes. We bicycle tapes to save money and oh, what an elbow smash. Oh my. But holy shit. Did you see that maneuver? What a maneuver.
One, but, two, he got, no, he didn't. We're going to have you call one of these whole matches as, as Vince. I feel like I should remind you that these guys were tag champs back in 85 and they beat Barry Windham and Mike Rotundo for the privilege and then lost them at WrestleMania 2, April of 86. Do you know legitimately, we talked about Olivia Walker who did Greg the Hammer Valentine's, robe. Do you know who was making Beefcake's tights?
I think it was the same guy that did later on did Savage's stuff, the Michael from Tampa, who did a lot of that stuff. And he did a lot of the spandex work and things like that. I'm pretty sure it was Michael.
A moment ago when Beefcake was strutting, Jesse said something like he's never seen worse rhythm in his life. And he says something like this guy's no Michael Jackson, which is obviously, you know, as 80s of a reference as you can get. Vince and his color guy for Saturday night's main event has always sort of been, you know, what I most identify with Saturday night's main event is Vince and Jesse. Do you think there was a better pair? I mean, did you prefer Jesse and Gorilla or did you like Vince and Jesse?
I don't know that Gorilla ever did Saturday night's main event. I know Bobby did Saturday night's main event with Vince, but to me, you know, the original is always going to be the best. And that's what's going to stick in my head as Saturday night's main event was Vince McMahon and Jesse Ventura. Oh my, come on, referee, break it up, break it up. Kind of referee looks familiar. Like he might have another twin that we've seen in here before. I just love that. It wasn't even, well, how long ago that we show the damn entrance? Actually, that's Dave Hebner right there, I think.
So was he the evil one or the good one?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh my. A moment ago, we saw, you know, before this match started, the graphics. Oh, here comes the honky tonk man. How fucking cool does the belt look right there? Man. The Intercontinental title looks awesome around honky.
That's because honky tonk man's greatest Intercontinental champion of all time.
Cutting a promo here. This is awesome.
You know, we wanted so badly to, you know, to get to that point with Honky Tonk Man, because if Beefcake was ever going to have a hair match that meant something, doing it with Honky Tonk Man shaving his head would have been off the chart.
Why don't you think that ever happened?
I don't think Wayne wanted to cut his hair. I think Honky felt that if he was to cut his hair, that would completely kill his gimmick. I think it would have made him, but I don't think Wayne really wanted to cut his hair. And Vince, for whatever reason, you know, coming from New York and up there, they didn't
get hair,
get the hair match thing. Yeah. He really didn't. He didn't think it was that big of a deal. Hair will grow back. Who cares?
How fun is the Honky character? I know we've talked about Honky a lot here, but dude, he has got such heat. I mean, is there a better just natural heel than Honky Tonk Man right here in 88?
No, man. Honky was red hot. And Honky was one of those guys. Honky would be very difficult to turn babyface. And when he first came in, Vince wanted him to be a babyface because he was so damn good at the gimmick. But he's a natural cocky heel and played it to the hilt. Oh my, look at Valentine elbow smashes right across the nose of Beefcake. Yeah, it just, this match is better than it, you know, deserves to be when you look back 2020.
I mean, I thought Greg Valentine was always a pretty good worker. As a fan, as a kid, I was never really a fan of his just because I was into, you know, Ultimate Warrior and Macho Man and these over the top characters. And Greg didn't really do it for me, but as an adult, I can appreciate that. Greg had good matches. I mean, his stuff with Roddy Piper at Starrcade is something people still talk about.
Well, Greg had great matches. I think that in later years, when Greg slowed it down so much to just be so damn slow and methodical, I think that's what people remember. But you see here, Greg's moving his ass off and having a damn good match. Greg in his heyday, in his prime, nobody could touch him in the ring.
Could you say the same for Brutus the fucking Barber Beefcake?
Yeah, you still can't touch Beefcake. Look, he's trying to give Beefcake Valentine some tights just like him. Come on, Greg, show your ass. Show more side ass.
How would Vince ask for more side ass?
Oh my, got a little side ass from the Valentine, from the Hammer. We don't want to see the Hammer, McMahon.
The Hammer. Listen to you.
God, I've just gone right there twice already, and I never go there.
I think you need to crank one out. You'll feel better.
Well, you know, just saying. I didn't say Valentine was sexy, except when you saw the side tie to Valentine for a minute, you thought about it, didn't you?
No, I did not.
A little bit?
Maybe a little.
Okay.
So, Nashville here is the choice for Saturday night's main event. That's not, you know, I mean, it has been a wrestling town, but that's not like a hotbed for WWF at the time.
Well, actually it was a damn good market, and it was sold out. We had a hell of a house there, and the business was hot at this point in time. This was where we could just put WWF on the first time probably that we could put WWF on the marquee and sell out without having to announce a match. So Nashville was good for us. Yeah, there were still some markets that weren't all that great, but Nashville was not one of them. Nashville was a good market for us.
So the getting on the outside and having the tease of some interaction with the referee was always something that was a big deal whenever there was a manager, whether it was Mr. Fuji or Jimmy Hart or whomever. And there you go.
You don't have the megaphone, do you, Jimmy? You know, get him. Come on, Beefcake. Almost just almost.
Look at that boot to the head. That looked pretty damn legit. So the wooden steps here, again, not around the corner, you know, like the metal, diamond plate steps we see now. You said before you thought maybe those wooden steps from the main event, here comes the finish. This is a pretty common finish here that you guys used a lot. I think that was even used at WrestleMania 4. And then again, at Survivor Series 88, and maybe even WrestleMania 5, like Herc and Haku and Ultimate Warrior and Hercules. And I think Bret Hart pinned himself. Who is in love with this finish? Both shoulders down. One guy gets him up at the count of three. Is that Pat Patterson's sort of go-to at the moment?
Oh no, no, this I don't know who would have set it up, but I mean, this was a go-to finish for a lot of people for when you just wanted to get a controversial finish and get your baby face over looking good without really hurting the heel too much. And it was, God, everybody used that finish.
And here come the scissors. So you know what this is supposed to be. We're going to get a little haircut in action and snip, snip. There we go. How did the guys feel about getting their hair cut? I know you said a minute ago, Honky didn't want to be shaved bald, but Valentine, give a shit that somebody snips a lock here.
Afford Anything talks about how to avoid common pitfalls, how to refine your mental models, and how to think about how to think.
Paula, while certainly you can mess up on $1 million a year, it is far less likely than it is on $30,000 a year.
Right.
I would meet wonderful people that were struggling with a budget that was super tight. It was 100%. You need to make more money.
Make smarter choices and build a better life.
Afford Anything, wherever you listen.
You know, as long as it wasn't too much. Now, with the guys, the extras that came in and worked with Beefcake, that was part of the deal, and they got paid extra to get a haircut and, you know, never made it so bad that it couldn't be repaired. And that was, he just got a little snip, snip enough to see that it was actually Valentine's hair. And he's got the shears. He's got the shears, Jesse. He's going to get him some. He's got the mouth of the South. Oh, my. And Jimmy was
a working
amiable
ass
to get his little bit of his haircut. Didn't mind.
Here's what's fun to me in hindsight when you think about it. Beefcake's supposed to be the baby face and he's chasing guys with a knife. I mean, how are you the baby
face? It's not a knife, it's shears. He's a barber.
Okay, so if I just chase people around the Walmart with the shears, that's okay?
If you're a barber and you're strutting the guy
where the fuck are you getting your hair cut where they're using those garden shears?
At the Garden Shear Cuts Are Us.
Is there a better promo in the history of the business than Bobby the Brain Heenan?
Absolutely not. And you know, that bow tie that he's wearing there, I have one of his red ones like that. And really all it is it's elastic string around a bow tie and it fit everywhere and was extremely comfortable.
Well,
Bobby was into ease of use.
We're going to have to get you to post a picture of that on our Instagram.
I don't know where the hell it is.
Why would you say you have it if you don't know where it is?
Well,
it'd be like, if
let me put it this way. I had it. It's probably in a drawer somewhere. And as I've been going through my drawers in the office, bow to the king, by God, look at how sweaty Harley is.
I can't see Harley here and not think of Bad Santa.
Shit.
I mean, I feel like
you just fucked up Harley Race for me for life.
When Harley started talking though, I just needed him to say, you want some sandwiches?
Oh my God. Wow.
You're welcome.
You know what? That hurt. That, I mean, really, Harley Race, one of the baddest human beings on the face of God's green earth.
Wait, say it like he does though.
I am the baddest human being walking God's green earth. You know what this championship means? It means that I can walk down any street in the world and know that I am the toughest man walking that street. The king.
I feel like we should mention here, even though Greg lost in that match against Brutus the fucking Barber Beefcake, he's actually going to go on to compete in the world title tournament at WrestleMania 4 and even gets a win over Ricky Steamboat there. Okay, here you go. Take over, brother.
Well, tonight, brother, first of all, me, G, Hulkamania will never die, brother. The big wheels of Hulkamania, they're churning away. And Harley Race, you're only one thing in my way before I get to WrestleMania, before I get back to the world title. Oh, yeah, Heenan. You're a smart man. You sold Andre Giant because you knew he could never beat me, brother. But as far as me bowing in servitude before the king, I only bow to one man, Mean Gene, and that's Vince McMahon, dude. Because the dude walks on water, dude. And as far as I'm concerned, Harley Race, when I get done with you tonight, all the weasels, horses, and all the weasels, man, will never be able to put the king back together again, brother.
Feel better?
Ooh, shirt's ripped. Uh-oh.
How would you describe the look he's sporting here? That's the... I love it. If I knew how to spell what you just did, it would be on a shirt, but I can't.
And wet. Yeah.
So here we go. They go to commercial here, with the Hulkamania graphic, dude. I just love the graphics that are on this show. And I thought it was funny cause they go to commercial and when they come back, Hogan's still in the exact same spot as he was before. So this wasn't actually done live. When would this have been taped?
Well, no, this was taped probably shit. This probably taped a week or two ahead of time before it actually aired. So a lot of editing done. And Harley with the headbutts, man. Harley loved his headbutts. And, you know, Harley Race, you go back and look at this. Look at this match here right now. This was really a dream match if it had happened just probably 8 years before.
Right.
And Harley still, man, you know, still a working son of a bitch.
Yeah, I mean, you would have had the NWA World's Champion just 5 years prior to this. He was the NWA champ, and Hulk Hogan here 5 years later is on top of the world as the WWF champ. So even maybe like 3 years prior to this, it would have been a dream match.
Yeah. And Harley, you know, you heard of the Ribera Steakhouse and everything in Japan,
right?
Well, let me smarten you up to the whole Ribera Steakhouse thing too. You know, all the boys talk about, hey, you got your picture. Oh my, over the top. Oh, right on top of the table. Oh, but, you talk about, everybody talks about, oh, I got my picture up in Ribera Steakhouse. You know what he does is he just puts everybody's picture up, whoever's on tour.
Right.
At the time. So those guys' pictures aren't up, but Harley on his Ribera Steakhouse, the signature used to be the real, and he underlined real world champion on his picture there in the Ribera Steakhouse. I think Harley stayed up all the time. Nobody's too afraid that Harley might just happen to be cruising through Tokyo one night and stop in for a steak and his picture's not up there. Then you're fucked.
And the deal with that steakhouse was it's like steak and corn. That's like the go-to, right?
That's it. And it's not even a good steak. Just
so it's not like Jimmy's Famous Seafood now where all the boys go and get their picture made because that stuff's actually really, really good.
Yeah, Jimmy Seafood's badass, but no, Ribera, it was a place to go. It was kind of a status thing. You know, you'd go to the Hard Rock and you'd go to Ribera Steakhouse and get a free jacket and a free steak, all the steak you could eat. They'd keep feeding you until you were full.
Did you get a jacket?
Yeah.
Do you have it?
It's somewhere. I don't know where, but
man, you got to find that. It would be badass if you would sport that at some of our live shows.
Well, you know, actually it may fit me now because it was really big when I got it, but, I went to Ribera Steakhouse, had a couple steaks and, I remember looking at the sponsor who brought me going, okay, so this is Ribera's. Can we go back to the Korean barbecue place, you know, next time? But they were very nice. They're really nice. They take care of the boys and they're good people.
You just slipped a word in there. A lot of people would not be familiar with smarten everybody up about what a sponsor is.
A sponsor is just somebody that they're the ones that buy the shows. They're the ones that kind of take care of the boys, the American boys that are on tour, take them out, make sure they, you know, take them out to dinner, take them out for drinks and just help them with translators and different things on the shows.
Let's process what we're seeing here. Hulk Hogan, who's babyface,
yeah,
is using wrist tape to choke Harley Race and then hiding it from the referee.
Yes.
How would you describe that clothesline?
The shits.
What was Hogan doing out there?
What's that?
What was that? It wasn't really a clothesline, and then he wasn't really punching him. He wasn't really slamming his head down. Hogan looks lost a little bit right here working with Harley.
No, it's just Hulk didn't have to do a whole lot other than be tan as a motherfucker and drop the leg.
Here's my question, though. Like, in traditional, I don't know shit about wrestling, so let me just say that up front. Isn't this supposed to be Harley getting the heat on him, and then he makes the comeback? He's just eating him up.
It's Hulk Hogan. There are no rules when you're in the ring with Hulk Hogan, and Harley Race is the king. There are no kings in America. So Hulk Hogan's the king. Yeah, all bets were off. You know, you look at traditional baby faces. This is what's so funny when people point to Stone Cold Steve Austin. Oh, he was not the traditional baby face. You know, he's an ass kicker. He swears. He does all that stuff. You just watch the Hogan match. He cheated all the way through it.
I feel like I should remind, I love those knee drops. Those knee drops are real. I feel like I should tell everybody, since we mentioned it a minute ago, this was taped 5 days ahead of time. So this was taped on March 7th. We're actually seeing it here on March 5th. It's
taped on my birthday? Damn.
Yeah. So you were here on your birthday, I guess.
Yeah.
How'd you celebrate in Nashville?
Probably celebrated by going to Chattanooga or something like that, that night after the show.
You'd prefer to go to Chattanooga than Nashville?
Well, we were probably just on to the next town. I don't recall really any.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, here we go. This is pretty incredible when you think about it. I want to remind you, this is March of 1988. March of 88.
And it's Hulk Hogan and Harley Race.
Right. And here we go.
Oh,
what a fucking table spot. It's the first time I remember seeing a table spot done. Of course, the next year, Terry Funk and Ric Flair in Nashville again, ironically, with a ringside table. I mean, what are the odds of the two earliest table spots I remember both being in Nashville?
Not at ECW and not with Sabu and not with those guys, with true legends of the ring. You know, you look at Harley Race, Hulk Hogan, Terry Funk, Ric Flair.
It's pretty funny though, because in my head, when Bad Santa was climbing up there to jump off into the table spot, I imagine him saying, "Sabu, eat your heart out." And you know, the old cliche that you've done a million times about Harley Race, whenever someone is describing their finish to Harley, what's he always say?
Well, that was Harley's finish. He'd look at the kids, be smoking his cigarette and go, "What's your finish, kid? Tell him what your finish is." Big drag on the cigarette. I'll move.
And when it came for time for Hulk Hogan to lay across the table and Harley come out, Hogan moved.
Exactly.
Fun stuff here. The classic Hulk comeback now, you know what's coming. This is,
Harley's a bumping machine.
I know. That's what I was going to say. We always talk about how Harley in the WWF just seems old and comes off old, but, man, he's just all over the place for Hogan here.
I mean, Harley Race was a bumping machine, and now another bumping machine, you know, Bobby Heenan, who was an unbelievable worker as well. But Bobby, you know, great bumping machine and could move and was agile. Look at that, jumping over the top rope and getting out of Dodge. I mean, that takes a great deal of athleticism you don't expect out of a guy like Bobby Heenan.
I feel like I should remind everybody here that, and this spot here is a crazy spot. He suffers some pretty serious internal injuries here. Apparently he had a hernia out of this, right?
Yeah, he got messed up pretty good, man. And it wasn't, you know, wasn't any of these damn gimmick tables or anything like that. That was just a shoot table, hardly like, "I'll get through it." Had to be sturdy enough to hold their weight and do all that shit. And come on, look at Hulk Hogan. Look at him. Look at him. Everybody. Oh my God. Give it to him. Come on, Hulkster. Yeah.
How would Vince describe this scene right here in three words?
Hogan must pose, by God.
Yeah. So let's sort of smarten everybody up about this. This is, I guess Saturday night's main event started in like 85. This is the first one where Hulk is not the world champion. And of course they're doing this in the second match position. It's not going to be the last match on the card. We've talked about that, psychology before. What was the thinking in putting Hogan on second as opposed to last here on Saturday night's main event?
That's the money spot because it, sorry, I have to laugh when Ted DiBiase laughs. That's the money spot because you're fighting sleep and you want to put your feature matches on first and put them on early. And later on, as you're fighting sleep, the not as important matches go on a little bit later.
You know, what's funny is as a kid, I thought the Million Dollar Man's costume was like the coolest shit ever. And now as an adult, I look at it and I'm like, if somebody wore that out on WWE TV on Monday, they would look fucking ridiculous. But as a kid in 1988, this was the fucking coolest thing ever.
That's because he was a $1 million man. He would have to be a $1 billion man to have heat. Today, yeah, everybody's a millionaire. Shit. But back then, I was just saying, you know, I was like,
I love you. For, everybody's a millionaire now. I mean,
yeah. Virgil's going to get him some damn
meat sauce.
So, you know, shit. I mean, look at how good Virgil looked too, though. Would you want to mess with Virgil?
No, and I don't want a picture or autograph either.
I can get you one.
I'm sure you can. I'm sure everybody on the subway can. Hey, well, so let's talk about Harley and Hogan here as we get teed up for this match. They had actually wrestled before back in October of 83. They did it in St. Louis, and Hogan was the challenger for Harley's NWA world title. And I think they wrestled a few times at Madison Square Garden right after WrestleMania 3, which was probably a bit of a dream match, as we sort of talked about. And there's a pretty famous story about when Hogan was trying, Hogan was on top when the WWF brought their show to town in Harley's town. We'll tell that story in a minute. Let's let the Macho Man do his thing here.
Freak out. Let me just growl a little while here, man. Gene. Oh yeah. Because it's worth its weight in gold. Macho talks. The money walks. And the Macho Man is going to come out. $1 million man. You're trying to cash a check against the Macho Man, Randy Savage, but it's going to bounce. And I'm going to bounce you all over the World Wrestling Federation Entertainment. Oh yeah. Talking about the worth of gold. Ain't going to do it, Mean Gene. Ain't going to do it because the bravest little manager in the world, she's here right now. My platinum doll. Elizabeth, how do you like the $1 million man? Let's go walk that aisle. Ready? Dig it.
Well, there you go, Macho Man.
You know, it's sort of I love those graphics, man. I can't stop talking or thinking about this Harley Race situation, but I'd be remiss if we didn't talk about what's on screen right now, which is Miss Elizabeth, who's dressed like she's going to prom. But how awesome is the presentation of Macho Man and Miss Elizabeth here?
Man, they coordinated all their outfits. They always look great. And that was the idea behind Liz was to be classy and just beautiful and to exude class and not be what, for the most part, the wrestling industry had prior to that as far as their presentation of valets and women in the business. She was unique.
Sort of fun knowing what we're going to see in just a few weeks at WrestleMania. Because we've got Million Dollar Man versus the Macho Man in the main event at WrestleMania 4 for the world title. And it's supposed to be happening here on Saturday night's main event, when all of a sudden Andre the Giant has something he'd like to get off his chest, or so it seems. Is this Andre's favorite jacket? I feel like we saw Andre rock this jacket quite a bit.
That's Andre's outfit.
It's his go-to?
No, that's just his outfit.
Those are the only clothes he owns?
That's his outfit. Yeah, pretty much. He may have owned others. He just didn't wear anything else.
He wore that same thing every day.
Yeah. Carried a little bag with his ring gear and boots in it.
So his only bag that he carried, there was no other clothes. It's just the ring gear's in the bag and he's wearing that. Okay.
Yeah, for the most part, you know, and that was about it. That's about what you saw. And when you look at all the pictures, man, that's why you say, God, does he own any other pants or jacket or shirt? And they just keep getting sweat through and sweat through night after night, day after day.
How did the guys wash their gear?
In the sink.
You know, we get that question a lot on social media, and I just didn't think people really had a concept of that. Cause it's not like it's not like they're all just going home after this and they just throw it in the washing machine. That's not an option.
No, you wash it in the sink in the hotel. A lot of guys would either carry Woolite or just use whatever soap or shampoo, you know, that they'd have in the hotel, and you wash it in the sink in the hotel, dry it, hang it up in the shower on the, remember when they used to have the strings?
I still do.
That you could. Oh, okay. I probably am so used to them, I don't notice anymore. But they have the strings where you could hang your stuff up, and that's how you did your laundry.
They usually do it now when you're at a beachfront property, so you can like hang right. Swimsuits up or whatever.
Exactly.
So this whole Hulk Hogan Harley race match, I'm still fascinated with, because, as we said, there was a time where the WWF started to come into Harley's territory where Harley was promoting, and Harley took great issue with that. You know, he thinks it cost him hundreds of thousands of dollars, and allegedly he came to the show and tried to burn down a ring, and another time brought a gun. Do you remember these instances?
Well, I don't know that Harley himself, tried to burn down a ring. I think that's more urban legend than it is anything else. But Harley showing up at a show in Kansas City and nobody stopping him walking in the building, that part is true. And I don't know. There's a lot of different versions of what happened there. And I think it's just grown to myth at this point. Love this stuff with Savage. Good God. DiBiase and Savage could work their ass off. But the whole thing with Harley coming in basically came in and threatened Hulk and let him know that, just threatened him. You know, Hulk was the top guy. Harley was the top guy on the other side, and just wanted to let Hulk know that anytime that he wanted to try him for real, he was available to be tried for real. And that was the gist of it.
What's funny to me is Hogan tells a different story than Harley. Hogan says he was on the John when Harley came to visit, and Davey Boy announces to where Hogan can hear, Harley's here. And Hogan has been told, hey, he's coming for you. And he had sort of been trying to dodge him all day and just making himself scarce. So now that he knows he's sort of,
wouldn't you,
in a compromised situation, he stands up and doesn't even wipe his ass. And as soon as he opens the stall door, there's a gun in his belly, and Harley says something like, I came here to blow your kneecaps off, but I'd rather work with you. But of course it doesn't start that way at first. So when he puts the gun in his belly and says, I'm here to blow your kneecaps off, the way Hogan tells the story is he just shouts Vince McMahon's number, like 203, blah, 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 blah. Like, this is, you don't have an issue with me. I'm just one of the boys. I'm just working. I'm not the fucking promoter. But eventually, according to the rumor and innuendo, that meeting in the bathroom eventually leads to Harley coming in and working for the WWF, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, it does, where Harley wanted to make money, and he knew that the place to go to make money that he had left was the WWF. So he called Vince and they made their deal. But The gist of the story that we all heard on the other side, and I wasn't working in the WWF at the time when the altercation with Harley and Hulk took place, was that Harley just went in and threatened them, and everybody came in and Harley left. And it was, you know, nobody wanted to throw Harley out. Harley didn't try to mess with anybody, but let Hulk know that, hey, you're in my town.
I feel like we should let you know that this hernia surgery we talked about that happens as a result of that table spot we saw earlier, it's really sort of the end of Harley's run in the WWF. He would still appear in the Battle Royal at WrestleMania 4, but then he's out of action. He would briefly come back in 1989. So we're saying several months off, but then before you know it, he's out of there, and he would do, you know, some indie shots here or there, some Puerto Rican dates. But what we just saw was really one of Harley's last matches, right?
It was towards the end, and it was shortly thereafter that, that Harley's career pretty much came to an end right after WrestleMania 4.
These guys are having a really, really good match here, but I do want to ask Bruce, if you know that this is going to be your WrestleMania main event, why are you guys doing it on TV here?
Give you a preview and give you a taste of it. You know, we knew that, but the audience wasn't paying for that.
Right.
And they didn't know what everybody's thought that, you know, it was obviously going to be Hulk Hogan and the build for the most part, all the build was to Andre and Hulk, but it was also to people thinking that, well, it could be Hulk Hogan and DiBiase or Andre and Savage, trying to paint a lot of different pictures and give you a lot of different options here, but also give them a great match. So after the fact at WrestleMania 4, you saw a taste of the match. And when it comes, good God, Andre's sweaty. So when it comes to your town, you're excited about a match with DiBiase and Savage because you've already seen it.
So of course, Hebner's wanting to have none of it. I think the match has already been counted out, but obviously some interference here that shouldn't be allowed. You can probably,
well, he's getting rid of Virgil because Virgil, he's hungry, wants some meat sauce. Match continues though, because this damn referee with the plastic surgery and the $1 million man hanging out of his pockets there is, this is the good referee.
That's what I'm really struggling with is, you know, not only is this a central part of the storyline, but it's a central part of the storyline for this particular set of guys. And he's still in there. Why was Joey Morella not in there for this one?
Dude, it was the central storyline for WrestleMania 4. I mean, the whole damn thing is the why we were even having WrestleMania 4. And he's refereeing two matches on Saturday night's main event,
including this one. Which is the one
with the guy that paid him off.
Yes.
It makes no sense. That's where sometimes, you know, Vince would think, nah, nobody pays any attention to that.
Yeah, they do.
We just had a history package at the top of the show to remind highlighting you. It.
Right.
So the explanation was, I think he made it one time, and I don't even know if he made it here, was that, Dave Hebner back, that other referee is gone. And for a long time, when Earl refereed, we identified him as Dave.
Right.
Afterwards.
The top of the show, we sort of glossed over this, you know, when Vince is doing the stand up with, Ventura, and he started talking about Vince's Southern roots, that he's from down South. And what we saw with Jesse sort of checking his jacket was to see if he had a redneck, if he was a redneck. And you've sometimes referred to Vince in a way where you say Vince would even refer to himself as a North Carolina redneck, right?
Absolutely. Proud of it.
But he eats his candy bars with a knife and fork, right?
Not his candy bars, no. But it's, you know, that's the funny thing. Whenever I would ask, this was the best thing, you know, Vince would talk about eating stuff with his hands and how disgusting it is. And we would say, well, how do you eat a sandwich? That's different. I said, well, how do you eat pizza? And you know what his answer was to me? I fold it over. Not with my hands, but I fold it over. And that made it okay.
He's an interesting guy, man. These guys are working their ass off. I mean, would you argue at this point, these are the two best wrestlers in the company?
Yes, they are. DiBiase, nobody could touch Ted DiBiase. He was the best working heel in the business, and Randy was on fire. And it was at a time these two guys were getting to the point of Ted trying to get Randy to trust him and just listen and go on out there and let Ted call the match. Randy had a tendency to want to know every single move of what was going on. And a big part of this was just getting Randy to trust Ted and let Ted call the match.
Oh, yeah, we're going to fly. Uh-huh.
What a great shot. Macho Man coming off the top with the double axe handle is something that everyone 35 to 40 years old did in their living room off the couch. Like, everybody listening grew up jumping around in their living room, pretending they were the Macho Man with the double axe handle.
Randy Savage used to make me get up on the top rope and stand and come off the top all the time when we would get to the towns early and get to the ring, and you gotta stand. Pat Patterson having a cigarette in the back as Elizabeth runs by. Always love that kind of stuff.
Ooh.
I feel like we should mention here, Andre, of course, getting in on some of the action here, beating up the Macho Man. So Miss Elizabeth is going to the bank to get Hulk Hogan. And this is maybe the first seed of the Mega Powers story and their explosion, right?
Absolutely. Well, yeah, I mean, these were just little seeds, but this was to get to sprinkling the Hulk dust on the Macho Man.
Sprinkle a little Hulk dust,
And to help Randy get over and to have him be accepted as an equal to Hulk Hogan when he was the WWF champion.
It's so fun to look at this in hindsight because you've got, you know, such a big set of characters here. I mean, larger than life characters with Andre the Giant, the Million Dollar Man, and of course, the Macho Man.
And DiBiase just beat Savage.
Yeah. By count out, there's your winner, the Million Dollar Man. And of course, they're going to hold him back and really do some punishment here. So you have an idea what's coming.
Yeah, I'm waiting for the, oh my God, oh God, the Hulkster, he's got a chair, he's got a chair. Look at him run, look at him, Jesse, look at him run like the cowards they are. You tell him, Hulkster, he's protecting the Macho Man. I love it. Look at him. Look at him.
What's the deal with Hulk's taped right hand here? He had it taped up for the Harley match too.
Yeah. I just thought it was, I guess his hand is taped up. I don't know. I really don't know. I thought it was, at first when I looked at it, I thought it was just the tape that he had taken off of his left hand when he was cheating to choke out Harley Race earlier. So I don't know. He just probably hurt his hand at some point. Just had a little extra tiz ape there to take care of the, you know,
man,
little extra torque.
The way Miss Elizabeth got down and the way it was shot up, it made me think that Kevin Dunn was in the booth, or maybe it was drop top titty tipping time.
Well, you know,
how fucking sad is it to look at this show? You know, we no longer have Miss Elizabeth. We no longer have the Macho Man. We no longer have Andre the Giant. We no longer have Bobby Heenan. There's so many people on this show who've passed away. It's just a fucking shame.
Yeah, it's rough. It's rough. And for me, like, you know, going back and looking at different guys that I worked with, the Brother Love thing, and when you realize that so many of them have left, it's tough. It really is. Because those were my contemporaries. And at this time, you know, shit, I'm only 25 when this is taking place. And, hell, I'd been in the business at that point for 15 years. So it's, man, I feel old all of a sudden. Why you gotta bring all that shit up?
How fun is the graphic here with the Hulkster with the red, white, and blue? Cause it's all about America, brother. How would you describe the killer bees?
You know, here's the thing, man. Jim Brunzell, unbelievable talent, unbelievable worker. What the hell? And Bobby's got his bee suit on, so he ain't going to get stung by the killer bees. And they got Matilda with him. Notice that?
Is this beekeeper shit? Is this a Dick Ebersol deal?
I'm sure it was, yeah. But the whole leash thing was when Matilda, the Highlanders took Matilda. And we used to walk around with one of those invisible dog leashes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good stuff. Good stuff. But Bobby ain't going to get stung by no bees. But Jim Brunzel was a hell of a worker, man. Jim Brunzel could have been a top single anywhere. And I think he just got pigeonholed into being a tag team guy.
How would you have described Jesse Ventura's shirt there? Like an evil pirate.
You know, we've addressed pirates more in the last 2 weeks than we have in our entire almost 2 year run here.
Bobby the Brain Heenan's jackets are something that in his outfits were pretty iconic. Did he make those? Did he have somebody do those for him? Do you know who put those jackets together with all the sequins and whatnot?
He had a lady in Tampa that made him stuff the sequin jackets, the all sequin jackets that he had. Had someone, a seamstress in Tampa, I believe, that made a couple of those for him. He had a black one, a blue one, and a red one. Then this stuff, the reason he stopped wearing those was because they were so hot and they were hard to travel with. And Bobby was all about function. Bobby wanted to bring one pair of pants, a couple of shirts, and a jacket for the whole run. That was all he, you know, when you're on the road all the time, you don't want to be carrying around 3 and 4 bags with you everywhere you go.
Why don't you think the Killer Bees did more in the company?
Why didn't they?
Yeah.
I don't think that anybody, what is there to get into the gimmick about? I mean, they're bees and they, bzzz.
Now at the same time though, you say that, but you also say, oh, Terry Taylor could have made the Red Rooster work. He just wouldn't.
He could have.
Well, how is the Red Rooster a potential great gimmick, but the Killer Bees is a stupid gimmick?
Well, because I think that the Killer Bees, the gimmick of doing the switch and doing the masks would have been a great gimmick, and they didn't like doing the mask gimmick. If they had done the mask and embraced the mask gimmick, I think that the Killer Bees would have been tag team champions, would have been looked at a lot better. But when you take that away from them, you take the switch away from them and all that stuff and not being able to tell them apart, it's then they just become the Killer Bees. They're Brian and Brunzel, or Blair and Brunzel, the Killer Bees. But I like the mask gimmick and the switching gimmick, which is what it apparently was originally supposed to be.
I mean, look at this referee in this one. Like, why couldn't he have been in some of the other matches instead of Hebner? Like, that didn't make any sense to me.
Okay, stop. Look at him.
I knew you were going to say that. You hate this guy. We talked about this at Survivor Series 87.
I don't hate the guy. I just look at him. His shirt's all untucked. He's coming out. He ain't got no hair. It doesn't, I don't want to put that guy. You want to put this guy on network TV? I don't think so. You got Dave Hebner there. Put Dave Hebner out there. We'll just explain it away. And Brunzel got himself a nice little hard way there. Lovely brother.
This match was originally, or it actually was, a 2 out of 3 falls match, but you guys only show the first fall. You're just trying to fill the time here, and that's all you had time for?
Well, probably had more time for it, but things went heavy. So since we got the first fall in, just go with it, and in post-production, make it a 1 fall match.
The Islanders split up a few months later when Tama was fired. He wound up going to WCW as the Samoan Savage. What happened with that? Why did he get shit canned?
I think that it was just a combination of a lot of issues of not showing up and not showing up in condition to work and not being really reliable at the time.
So that put Haku into singles competition. He feuds with Harley Race when Race comes back briefly, and then he defeats him to become King Haku. How did Harley feel about putting over Haku and making him the new king of the WWF?
Harley was happy not to carry the crown and the robe around anymore. And that's a shoot. Everybody, it was, you know, when Duggan was the king, when Harley was the king, when Haku, it was the rib was, you got to carry that damn cape around and the crown everywhere, which is a pain in the ass.
We'll talk about the king gimmick in a minute. I wanted to ask this though. The Bees wind up attacking Hulk Hogan in a lumberjack match that he was having against Ted DiBiase at the Philadelphia Spectrum. And that happened the day this match aired. So on March 12th, you guys were actually running a live show in Philly, but nothing ever really came to fruition. Was there a discussed Killer Bees heel turn, or when they attacked Hogan, was that just a one-off or just trying things or
doing things in a house show to make them different? Let the guys have some fun.
So the one man gang here doing his promo with the Slickster, and Slick's going to call the Olympic team, cause that's happening around this same time, 30 years ago as well. And he's saying that they're losers. And I think he mentioned something like Gene's son was on the hockey team. What's up with that?
Gene's son was on the hockey team.
He was on the Olympic hockey team.
He had something to do with it. Yeah. But Gene's son was a stud.
Well,
yeah. And here, you know, one man gang's going to do his promo here in a second. Roll Tide.
Listen to you.
Is that what he says?
Oh, I'm excited for you to do your impression of his promo. There you go.
And translated, that means Roll Tide.
It does. Yeah. I can confirm that rumor and innuendo. Hey, let's talk about something that I don't think gets discussed enough. And it happened around this show. Jerry Lawler actually files a lawsuit before this show because he wants to make sure the WWF is not legally able to have Harley Race wear a crown or a robe in the entire state of Tennessee.
How'd that work out for him?
Sounds like a fucking gimmick that he should not be upset about, but he was, and allegedly he won the lawsuit, but you guys still fucking did it.
Yeah. How'd that work? I was just cause yeah. I mean, how'd that work out for him? It was a silly lawsuit, but at the same time, I applaud Lawler for protecting his gimmick and fighting for it.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask. Did everybody in the back sort of think that was fucking ridiculous, or were some guys saying, not good for him, man. This is his territory. We're coming, trying to fuck him around. He's got to defend himself.
I think everybody felt it was pretty ridiculous.
Yeah.
But at the same time, business being business, I'm happy for him. You know, hey.
So even though Ken is a baby face here, fresh off his prison run, he doesn't really seem to fit. I mean, a few years prior to this, he was the blonde haired version of himself and managed by Bobby Heenan. They do that big angle with Big John Studd. What do you remember about Patera post prison? It doesn't seem like it was the home run it maybe could have been.
No, it really wasn't. And it was, you know, I think that Ken's best run in any territory was as the bleach blonde heel, anti-American Olympic hero. But Vince didn't want to do that after the prison run and felt that he could tell a happy ending story with Ken and make him a baby face. I think Ken naturally is a heel in life.
Yeah. I mean, and if you see his interviews, his shoot interviews, you can tell he's a heel in real life.
Yeah, but I mean, I've always always had a good time with Ken, and I always liked Ken. He was always super nice to me, but it just didn't connect in any way, shape, or form. People couldn't relate to him.
He looks like an American gladiator of sorts here with the getup, and I've always thought Ken Patera in this era could have been like a Paul Orndorff for Hulk Hogan. He would have been a good opponent for him, but we never really got that. Do you think that was leaving money on the table?
Well, I don't think that Ken, you know, coming out here, Ken had aged. He didn't have that chiseled body that he had prior to, you know, in his last heel run. So I don't know. He didn't look like that badass anymore. Here's arguably at this point in time, the world's strongest man. And he didn't look like it. So I think it was just perception.
Did he talk to you about prison?
No, we never, you know, never really talked much about it other than, you know, nobody really messed with him or Saito, and the guards would always, here's the one thing I remember, Ken Patera talking to me about prison was be cool to the guards and you'll get extra bananas. And that was all, that was interesting to me that they would be nice to the guards and the guards were nice to them. You didn't mess with them. You get extra bananas and you get extra food and they didn't mess with you. Oh my God.
What the fuck was that?
That was called taking a bump in sections.
Is it true?
Seriously, that man, will you do your hair like that, please?
I mean, maybe. Maybe Halloween.
Do a tattoo?
Maybe, I'm not doing tattoo. Maybe I could do Halloween as one man gang. Yeah, I'll go as one man gang this year for Halloween.
How about for your wedding?
No.
No. Oh, come on.
I'd get shot down on that. Weddings aren't for dudes, man. Weddings are for chicks. I got to do what she wants to do.
Man.
Well, that's the trade off, right? She has to do what I want to do for the rest of her life. And I have to do what she wants to do that day.
Okay. Is that how it works?
I mean, that's the way I've pitched it. And it's been well received.
Well, I'm just saying, I pitched it that way too. Many, many years ago.
And now you mind.
And after a while, it just doesn't exactly work out that way. I'm just giving you a pro tip here.
It wears off
from experience. Yes.
So there you go. Yes. I've always been fascinated by this set. I think we might get a few more words from the Hulkster here, but the set we just saw, I want to touch on that. You know, you got the old guardrails, the blue mats, the ring, the skirt that doesn't cover the whole deal. But over in the corner, we saw the wooden steps I started talking about earlier. They're not the diamond plate steps that go around the post. At this point, you guys are toting those around with you. The announcer or the ring announcer having a table ringside. What's up with that?
Well, you had to have a table ringside because you had to have your timekeeper and your bell on the table. So that was a requirement in some states.
But how hilarious is that? And so there's the bell's on there and it's a table skirt, but that second table that was there for Harley and whatnot in kayfabe land, why was that table there?
Well, and also in real shoot land, for commissions and stuff, you had to have tables at ringside and shit for them to be there.
The promo we just saw is worth going back and seeing. It's not nearly as crazy as the WrestleMania 4 one, but he does the fee-fi-fo-fum, which is pretty fun for Andre the Giant. This outfit here, as we sort of wrap up, who's dressed more ridiculous? McMahon or Ventura?
Well, I kind of like them both. I've always wondered where you can get one of those paisley tuxedos. And the only two people I've ever seen in my life, and there's probably a lot more, and I'll get a lot of Twitter, that had paisley tuxedos were Vince McMahon and Gorilla Monsoon.
And Bruce Tharp.
Tharp has a paisley one?
Yeah, he wears gimmick jackets like that.
Well, so he's an idiot.
Here we go with the credits. And Kerwin Silfies is on there.
Ferd Manning. Just talking about him the other day.
Richie Posner. We saw R. Posner in there, which we've talked about a lot. Our magic man.
Yeah, I'm not in there.
Where's Kevin Dunn?
I bet he's not in there either.
How crazy is that?
We didn't get a lot of love from the NBC people. And I don't even think Kerwin was on there.
Yeah, he was.
He was?
Yeah, I saw him. Once a Month Productions, of course, as a reminder, was Ebersol's production company. Let's talk about some questions on Facebook and then we'll wrap this episode up. I want to remind you, this was your very special bonus Saturday edition. We're usually Friday noon's main event. Well, today we were Saturday noon's main event, but we're going to be back at you next Friday with a brand new episode. It's going to be all about WrestleMania 19. So mark your calendar down. We're going to be back with you on 3/16 for Steve Austin's very last WrestleMania. The poll is up and active right now. If you haven't voted already, at Pritchard Show for what you want to hear on the 23rd. On the 30th, we're going to be back with WrestleMania 4, which is the next major show after Saturday night's main event we just saw. Of course, on April 6th, we're going to be covering Goldberg in the WWE, and that happens on the day he goes into the Hall of Fame. And then on April 13th, we're going to be covering the first time Raw beat Nitro, and it happened 20 years ago on April 13th, 1998. On April 20th, we'll be covering Rob Van Dam, And then we're going to have a backlash poll on April 27th. So lots of great stuff coming down the pike, here at Something to Wrestle. If Bruce finds any of the props that he was talking about here, he'll post them on Instagram, which is at Pritchard Show. And you can vote in that poll at Pritchard Show on Twitter. Let's get to some questions. Bruce, are you ready?
I am ready.
Tim wants to know, Brutus the fucking Barber Beefcake always seemed a little careless with those shears, the way he swings them around. Was anybody ever hurt?
No, he was a highly trained professional.
Clint wants to know, did anyone ever rib Harley Race and did they live to tell the tale?
Would you?
Did Harley ever rib anybody else?
No, Harley was a pretty straightforward guy. Harley liked to have fun. I will tell you about a rib that took place at this Saturday night's main event. Since we were in Nashville, there was an old timer in Nashville by the name of Gentleman Saul Weingroff, and he was an old school manager. And he was also a sheriff in Nashville, worked for the sheriff's department there in Nashville. So during the day we had, and I don't even know who orchestrated the whole thing. I believe it was Vince, but they had Weingroff come by because they knew that Jesse wouldn't know who he was. And Weingroff came in dressed all in his police outfit and what have you, and said he had a warrant for Jesse's arrest. And he needed to take him into custody immediately. And Jesse sat there and very politely argued with him and says, no, you got the wrong guy. And, you know, is this a rib? And he actually had a real warrant drawn up and he had official looking paperwork and he had his partner there with him. And they actually got Jesse up and got him handcuffed and started walking him out before they finally let him in on the rib. But, I think everybody expected Jesse to explode a little more than he did. He was very, I think he thought, well, it could be, I'm not going to do anything to ruin my chances of getting out of here tonight. But that was the one rib that went down that day.
Fun times. Sean wants to know, considering Harley's pre WWF legacy, was there ever serious consideration into giving him a title run?
I don't think so, because he was a heel and it was a babyface territory. Vince liked having a babyface champion.
Kenny wants to know, considering the WWF was now national, what was Vince's view on certain wrestling towns that didn't necessarily classify as small in population size, but they were really known as wrestling towns prior to the national expansion in 84, towns like Nashville, St. Louis, and Kansas City.
Well, in particular, Nashville and St. Louis did huge business, did really good business in both, and actually did television out of St. Louis. Kansas City, not so much. But in later years, Kansas City was a decent town. But it was out of those three, Nashville and St. Louis were always good for the WWF.
Alexander Kellerman wants to know, do you think Harley Race sold out by coming to work for Vince McMahon, or was it just smart business?
Smart business. What are you selling out? You're making a living for your family.
John wants to know, I always loved Slick. Who came up with that character?
I believe that was a Vince McMahon creation. And, the rumor and innuendo always was that Slick was Rufus R. Jones's son or grandson or some kind of relation. And I don't believe that there's any, truth to that. You know, he was Kenneth Johnson, but I know he had some kind of tie to the wrestling business. Always thought Slick was a hell of a manager.
Jason wants to know, where do the Islanders rank amongst your favorite tag teams?
Definitely top five.
Josh wants to know, he's a bit of an asshole with this question. Can Bruce Pritchard finally give us a good Hulk Hogan story?
Nope.
Thank you for that. Kevin wants to know, during the Savage DiBiase match, I noticed that Virgil and Savage seemed to be going at each other really hard. Was there major heat between the two in real life?
No, Savage was just stiff and Virgil didn't know better.
Patrick wants to know, why not put DiBiase over Randy by clean pinfall on the Saturday Night Main Event show to put the seed of doubt into the audience when they finally met at the finals at WrestleMania?
Did it really hurt your WrestleMania, expectations with the way that it was done? The answer is no.
Thomas wants to know, was someone in the NBC studios or the WWF a big Phil Collins fan? They seem to use a lot of his music during this era.
You know what I think it was? I think that Phil Collins and his people and his songs were probably a little friendlier to use, and they would offer them up for promotion versus a high rights fee.
Well, that's going to wrap us up here. Anything else you want to mention before we finish up our Saturday night's main event for March of 1988 watch along?
I think we're good, man. I think we're good. We got us some business to take care of this weekend and next, and let's have us some fizz on.
And don't forget to support thecrusher.org. Am I saying that right, Bruce?
You are. dacrusher.org. It's a great, you know, great organization. They're trying to erect a statue for the Crusher in Milwaukee, and they're only $5,000 shy of making this thing a reality. And I know that our listeners, if you just gave a little bit, man, reached out to them, I know it'll help.
Well, and it celebrates something positive about wrestling, and a statue like that in public is long overdue. So let's consider a donation for the good of wrestling. Even if you're not a Crusher fan, that doesn't matter. You're a wrestling fan. You're listening to this. Give a few bucks at thecrusher.org. And we'll see you here next Friday for WrestleMania 19 and something to wrestle with. Bruce Pritchard.
The world of MLW Radio never stops.
John brings his skewed sense of humor. Jeff brings tips to cut strokes off your next round. Together, it's those weekend golf guys.
They'll pay a lot of money to PXG and Titleist and Callaway and on, right? How many yards do you think you're going to pick up with that extra driver? I think I can get an extra 5 to 10. What if I give you 15 to 20? You pay me more.
Jeff Smith, right? Teaches on the sliding scale.
Those weekend golf guys, the podcast, part of the Believe Network. Just search BLEAV on YouTube or wherever you listen.